And we're live. It's The List Goes On, the official post show of The List and Your Boy from Fightful.com.
That's a nice, calming, soothing radio voice, Sean.
Right? I thought so, too.
So, John Moxley's challenger at Double or Nothing is Brody Lee. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't like it.
I think it's way too soon.
It's way too soon. I think it's not great to have him put up against mid-card former WWE guys back-to-back. Were they misused WWE stars? They sure were. Yep. But I think it sends a very bad message right now. Maybe it was a product of the situation we're in, because as John Moxley told me in our interview, it's not optimal. But I think he really needed to regain some steam with them, or gain some steam with Brody, before throwing him right in there.
For sure. Who has Brody Lee beaten so far of any prominence in AEW?
Marco Stunt.
Okay. And there's your number one contender.
Yeah.
For the AEW title. I think it's way too soon. I don't like it at all. At all.
Yeah. I'm just like, man, poor John Moxley. He gets that title off of a guy who was a great champion in Jericho. And then almost immediately, no crowds as soon as he becomes champion. Yep. It's tough to gauge things that way.
Yep. Drew McIntyre, too. You know?
Yeah. Very good point. That's the thing. You got three new world champions over the last few months, all doing great YouTube and digital numbers, but it's hard to see what they can do in front of a live crowd. It sucks.
You know what? To me, right now, the YouTube numbers to me are not a gauge. Mm-hmm. Because I think right now, because the empty arena shows just aren't compelling, mm-hmm. I think a lot of fans are choosing to skip the live show, and then they're just checking out highlights on YouTube.
I'm sure plenty are, but even then, if you grade that on a curve, these numbers are still very impressive.
Yeah, I suppose. To me, Braun Strowman's stock is pretty low right now. Here's what it is. Now, you mentioned Chris Jericho. I want to ask you this. So he posted this on Twitter on May 10. I'm going to read this quote. He said, "Not being egotistical or arrogant, but right here and right now, for the first time since 2010, I honestly feel that I am the best in the world in the pro wrestling biz. Not going to discuss or debate. It's just the way I feel." What are your thoughts on that?
Good for him for having the confidence. He has every reason to feel that way. I remember like 10 years ago where there would be like people saying, even Jericho saying, "Oh, I'm the greatest of all time." I was like, meh. He keeps putting together a body of work that just keeps going and keeps getting at a higher level. He keeps getting over no matter what he does. Yep. He has been a main event talent for the better part of 20 years now. 20 years ago, he was doing that angle on Raw with Triple H where he won the title and Hebner had to take it back from him. 2 decades. Now, there have been some periods in there where he wasn't. There was a pretty solid few years where he wasn't, but he has done it in WWE. He's done it in AEW. He's done it in New Japan. He's done it all over the place. And he's done it as a babyface. He's done it as a heel. He did it back in the day as a cruiserweight, as a heavyweight. Mm-hmm. This type of versatility, I think, is very important. And now he's getting over other people over with him. Sammy Guevara's ascension is directly connected to Chris Jericho.
Yep. I think right now, in terms of being the best all-around performer, so in terms of character, promo work, in-ring work, all of that, I think Jericho is the best right now.
Yeah.
I mean, Drew McIntyre's stock has risen quite a bit, and good for him. But Drew McIntyre, he's not an all-around performer at the level of Chris Jericho. And I will say, in terms of being, say, a special attraction, like, you know, who's considered a star by the mainstream, Brock Lesnar is a bigger star than Chris Jericho to the mainstream. But in terms of who is the best all-around performer in the wrestling business right now, I think it is Chris Jericho. And as a matter of fact, I don't think it's close right
now. Yeah, it's hard to imagine somebody that's up there with him. I mean, he can do serious, he can do comedy. There's just so many different avenues he can go.
I agree. Let me see. New Japan. So Harold May, he did a video that was released this morning.
Oh, we're not talking about their card game, Jimmy.
Not going to talk about, I think it was an app, wasn't it?
A card game app or something, yeah.
Yeah, no. So Harold May did a video detailing how and when New Japan is going to return to live events, because they're one of the promotions that has taken the biggest hit financially.
Big time.
For a couple of reasons. Reason number one is they rely on live event revenue more so than AEW, more so than WWE. But on top of that, they haven't cut anybody. Like, they're continuing to pay their talent. So they've taken a pretty big hit. Harold May said that they will do empty arena shows once Japan lifts its countrywide state of emergency. They said the number of new infections has to decline, and they have to make sure that matches can take place in a safe setting. Mm-hmm. And he said once those three things happen, they're going to come back and do empty arena shows. And he said they plan to run both in Japan as well as at their dojo in L.A. I can see them going to L.A. first.
Yes.
I can see that happening. But the Japanese wrestlers probably aren't coming.
No.
You know?
Except the ones that are there already.
Except for the ones that are there already. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, I don't expect to see Bad Luck Fale on any of these shows. He's over in New Zealand or Australia or something right now.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you think WWE is going with the hacker gimmick? Do you think this is another one of these Vince McMahon things where he has an idea but has no clue how he's going to play it out? Do you think that's what it is?
I think they have an idea how it'll play out. They're getting different voices to do the voiceovers. That way when people like reverse engineer the voices, it comes out to a different person. So that's pretty cool. I like that. I think they have a direction for it. I think it will last for all of about 2 or 3 weeks. Then they'll have the person lose and womp, all the interest is gone.
Do you have any idea who that might be?
I think it would be Ali based on the logo, based on the circular logo, and it was the thing in his hand. Ali hasn't been wrestling since this hacker gimmick started. They took him off TV. They took him off dark matches. He hasn't been there. So I think it'd be him. That's my guess.
It's funny because when they started it, part of me, you know, was looking at that going, this has all the fingerprints of CM Punk on it.
Yeah.
But number one, that was very unlikely. Number two, on backstage this week, he trolled it.
Yep.
And as soon as I saw that, I thought, okay, it's absolutely not CM Punk.
Definitely not him.
In any way. So maybe Ali's the guy. I don't know. Next thing I want to talk about is Curtis Axel. So Arn Anderson on his podcast talked about Curtis Axel's usage in WWE and his release. And here's one thing he said. He said, quote, his lineage was huge in this industry. And he added, no, name him something else. Meaning you could have just called him Joe Hennig, but nah, let's call him Michael McGillicuddy. Let's do that, right? I look at that and, you know, wrestling has always been this weird business that's hard for me to understand, mm-hmm. where sometimes for whatever reason, they don't want you to get over, whether it's politically driven, whatever it is. For sometimes they just don't want people to get over, even though if people get over, everybody makes more money. The promoter makes more money. But this is just always how wrestling has been. I can't help but wonder why they would think for a second that the name Michael McGillicuddy was going to get over.
That was stupid. Like,
Of course it was stupid. Like, he was dead. He had no chance.
No.
When they gave him the name Michael McGillicuddy.
He definitely never had a chance there, and that was the first impression. And first impressions
are
very important.
Absolutely.
But they did eventually beat it over your head that this was the son of Mr. Perfect. They could have just called him Joe Hennig, but they didn't want anybody to have their own name. The Curtis Axel thing, I get it. Kurt Hennig, the Axe, Larry the Axe Hennig. I know there were a lot of people that said, he never got a shot in WWE. Oh, he sure did. He beat Triple H 3 weeks in a row, was Intercontinental Champion, got Paul Heyman as a manager. They tried with him. It just wasn't there.
But I do think that the Michael McGillicuddy run, because I think he had that run as Michael McGillicuddy for like 3 years before he became Curtis Axel.
I think
that run was an albatross.
Was it 3 years before then? I didn't think it was.
Yeah, including Nexus and NXT and everything. I think it was like 2010 to 2013, I think.
Really?
That he was Michael McGillicuddy, yeah. I think he was in Florida Championship Wrestling, too.
Wow, I think you're right. Wow, yeah, it was several years. It didn't seem like that long because really nothing notable happened during that period.
You think about the way the WWE machine works.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think about Nick Nemeth as an example.
Yeah,
I think that Dolph Ziggler has done a pretty astonishing job considering that they hampered him with that name, mm-hmm. Dolph Ziggler, inspired by Dirk Diggler from Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
You weren't going to have Dolph Ziggler hitting all the talk shows and all that stuff.
Like, well, they do. Like, they have him do talk shows and stuff.
They do, but it's kind of different now. It's a different time and things are just kind of different now. But at the time that he came out, he had so much talent and he had so much ability. And I really think the name Dolph Ziggler hampered him from the start. And same thing, Michael McGillicuddy. I don't know how for 2 seconds they would think that that's going to help anybody.
So stupid.
A Michael McGillicuddy. And when you look at names from the past, Randy Orton got to be Randy Orton. Ashley Fleer, yeah, they call her Charlotte, but she's Ric Flair's daughter.
Yeah.
They don't hide the fact she's Ric Flair's daughter. Rocky Maivia, The Rock, yeah, you know, they called him Rocky Maivia at first, but they never hid the fact he was Rocky Johnson's kid, you know? Like, I don't understand. I understand the premise of I want to get over on my own. I don't want to get over on the back of my dad. I get that. And that's fine. But Michael McGillicuddy? Somebody thought Michael McGillicuddy was the way to go?
Bad name.
So I wanted to talk about that because I agree with Arn Anderson. His lineage was huge. If they didn't want to call him Joe Henning, or maybe he himself didn't want to go by his real name because he wanted to make a name for himself, he could have gone in so many other directions. And it just seemed like another case where the machine failed him to a degree.
Yeah. You know? It sucks. It sucks.
Yeah. I guess I'll talk about Impact a little bit. Because I was telling Sean off the air, there's so much stuff that we didn't get to on the live podcast. And if I hit all this stuff, we're going to be here for another hour.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of picking and choosing. Do you think that Impact's going with Impact versus TNA storyline?
God, I hope. I hope so. I hope so, so much. Because they're... Go ahead. There's interest there, at least a little bit. It's something that's gotten them a little bit of buzz, the use of TNA. They got David Penzer back there. They got Moose, who was in TNA. EC3 is free. Drake Maverick is free. Kurt Angle is free.
Yes,
you got a lot... And Sting is out, which, from what I understand, Sting's been free for a long time. That apparently is not new. I guess he's been free for months and months and months. I think they should tie it around and bring in Dixie Carter for a shot or two, too.
Sure, I'm sure she's available.
Yeah, well, she's doing.
So long as there's no hard feelings there, I guess.
I think she still owns 1% of the company.
Oh.
Something like that.
That's always a possibility. What the hell is Carney Land?
What do you mean, Carneyland?
The NWA is debuting a show next Tuesday, May 19 at 6:05 Eastern called Carneyland.
Oh, yeah. Well, Billy Corgan said it was almost impossible to explain. And I don't know how the hell I'm supposed to explain it if the guy that created the damn thing couldn't explain it.
I hope they don't go too inside, you know? Sometimes that stuff's annoying. Like, do you remember Kazarni?
Yeah.
Sinbo D. That was so stupid.
I don't think they'll go that direction, but he did the video presentation of it and all that stuff, and to me it's like there's so much content right now. They gotta create their own for sure, but it's like, man, I'm jamming 16 to 20 hours every single week still in. So it's not gonna be something that's appointment viewing for me, but when I have time I'll check it out for sure.
What do you think of Randy Orton and Edge getting set for the, quote, greatest wrestling match ever?
That was such a dumb line.
According to Charlie Caruso, as she's conveniently standing right between them, right on camera there.
I felt bad that they made her say that because it all comes back on her. There are lots of people that think that she just said it. I'm sure she was told to say it. And Randy
Absolutely
Orton.
Absolutely she was. For
Randy
sure.
Orton even shot a look like, huh? Which is funny. I'm very interested to see if Randy Orton and Edge could go. I'm a little shocked they didn't do it on Raw, just to pop a rating.
Do you think, because, you know, Randy Orton said, you know, I challenge you to a straight-up wrestling match. Do you think they're just going to, like, chain wrestle and do counters and stuff? Like, do you think
Somewhat.
That's where they're going?
I think they're going to just do a regular pro wrestling match. It's a singles match.
But so just like any other wrestling match?
Yeah.
Okay, because I wondered if it was going to be, like, do you remember Bruno Sammartino, Larry Zbysko? Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
So anybody that maybe is before that time, so Zbysko was Bruno's protege, mm-hmm. and Zbysko wanted a match with Bruno to kind of prove himself, get out from under Bruno's shadow. Bruno agreed to do it, but he wanted just a straight wrestling match, and so they started with chain wrestling and counters and headlocks and stuff, and then Zbysko broke the rules, became a heel, you know, kick punches. I wonder if they'll go down that road where Randy is just doing holds and counters and stuff, and that just getting the best of them, and then Randy breaks the rules and starts punching and kicking and shit.
I would imagine it'd be similar to that.
Right. Okay. Last thing on my list, have you been watching the Taker documentary?
Yes. And
what do you think?
It's very good, and I'll have – yeah. That's all I can say right now. Okay. I have, and yes.
That's all you can say.
Yes, it is, because as I just realized, I'm legally obligated to not say anything else. Or morally obligated to not say anything else. Yes.
We're going to talk off the air. The only thing that I will say is I'm impressed that The Undertaker, this old school territory guy, has opened himself up to this. He was traditionally so protective. He, you know, they didn't even want him on camera at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Because he was so protective of his character. I respect the fact that he's kind of embracing this new landscape. And I'm also watching the footage. Made me a little sad for him. Oh, I was a little sad for him, and I was also a little sad for the narrative that the thing was taking. I was sad for him because the way he was hobbling around, he reminded me of Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
The way that Andre the Giant was walking, you know. So that was pretty sad. And where I couldn't help but kind of roll my eyes a little bit was when they kind of positioned Triple H as being the mentor guru guy, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like Triple H was the guy that was given the pep talk, and Triple H was the guy that noticed he was a little down on his
luck. He does do that though. That's all real from what I understand. I mean, we can maybe say that they position it, but that's from what I understand. That's how it is.
Maybe. One thing I do want to say too is we've talked about the Boneyard match and how the cinematic style of match could lengthen his career.
Mm-hmm.
If he chooses to go down that road. I guess what I'd like to know is when fans are back in the arenas, and it's going to be a while, but when fans are back in the arenas, do you think Taker himself is going to be cool with, I'm just going to do the cinematic matches, they're better on my body and whatnot, or do you think that he's going to want that live reaction because the wrestlers always talk about, you know, the adrenaline rush that they get from the live reaction?
I'll think he'll want the live reaction, but I think there are ways they can do it, like House of Horrors, where it starts cinematic and then it spills out. Because he even said in that first episode, oh, everybody says you can just come out and do entrance and choke slam and that's it. And he's like, yep. No, but that's exactly what he did in Saudi Arabia.
And so, Cena as well.
Yes. Well, he did. It was a squash. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, it was a little more than just a choke slam, because a choke slam, he can do choke slam till he's 70, for the love of God. He grabs him by the throat. He throws him up in the air. They jump. That's it. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited for this documentary. Because I've been a DVD collector for a long time. That's the omission. There's no real Undertaker documentary. They did one when he became American Badass, and that was not even half. That was like a third of his career at that point. So this is what I've been waiting for a long time.
I agree. It's been very interesting to watch, because, again, you've never seen him in this light before.
Yeah.
You know?
I love it. And I thought that the media tour to promote this was a bit of a mistake. I actually didn't know
they were doing a media tour.
Yeah, they did a car wash, media car wash, and I was like, I get it, you want to promote this, but I think it took a little bit of the lure away.
Interesting. Because, so Taker did a bunch of interviews?
Yes.
Really? I didn't know that.
And I put out there, I thought it was a bad idea. That being said, please give me an interview with The Undertaker.
All right, man, that's all I got for you.
We're out.